Welcome to Emerging Experts. In this episode, we're joined by Adam Weiner, a urologist with an oncology focus at UCLA, as he discusses his journey toward becoming an oncologist with a focus in urology. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you start by just telling us about your journey to becoming an oncologist and what drew you into this field?
Yeah, great question. And honestly, it goes all the way back to college for me when I knew I wanted to be pre-med and apply to medical school, and I wanted to get some clinical experience. And the opportunity came up at the cancer hospital where I went to undergrad. And I just found that the patient population was incredibly rewarding to work with, even as an undergrad where I didn't really have any medical insights, medical knowledge, or anything like that. I felt such a connection with those patients and really stuck with it.
Definitely. That's a wonderful answer. And have you had any mentors or significant figures who have helped shape your career?
Absolutely. And I definitely have to acknowledge that my mentors over the years have been absolutely critical for helping me develop into the person I am today, both clinical mentors during residency or medical school, and then of course, research and career mentors. I can't understate enough how important it is, how much they've been a part of my life. And, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for them.
Excellent. And as a fellow now at UCLA, what are some of the key experiences you've gained thus far?
So urologic oncology fellowship at UCLA has been absolutely critical for my development in so many ways. First, it has allowed me the time to just focus on oncology for the past 2 years. And without that, I really can't say that I could claim any level of expertise. So it really allowed me to focus on urologic cancers and focus on those patients, then also focus on the research and have the time and resources to start my research career. I mean, this is my passion, and I enjoyed all of urology residency, and everything that a urologist does is still something that I enjoy doing. But it was those 2 years that have allowed me to focus that really allowed me to become an expert.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And how have you balanced the demands of clinical research with training during your fellowship?
Right. So this is incredibly important because someone who's trying to strive to be a surgeon scientist, clearly they're passionate about not only the research, but also the clinical aspect of things and taking care of patients with cancer. So I would say that balancing that time is something that I gained some insights on during fellowship. So again, luckily I had wonderful mentors here in Dr. Robert Ryder and Mark Litwin, who really helped me focus and hone my abilities to protect my time and do the things that I was passionate about so that I could build the foundation that could really help me establish kind of those first steps in a career.
Excellent. And looking down the line, what are your long-term career aspirations in oncology?
So right now I am going to start my first faculty role over at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center here in Los Angeles. So I'm getting really excited about that. The first job is going to be a half-time research, about half-time clinical, which is exactly the kind of role that I wanted. So I could both, you know, help patients with urologic cancers while also doing the research that I'm passionate about. A long-term career goal, of course, is establishing that clinical practice, gaining more expertise in the surgeries and treatments that we offer to those patients. And on the research side, I have started to build my expertise and background in becoming a biomarker researcher in prostate cancer. So as the overall goal is going to be advancing precision care for patients with prostate cancer and eventually using those biomarkers in clinical trials.
Perfect. That brings me right into my next question. Just, are there any specific areas within oncology that you're particularly interested in?
Absolutely. So at this point, the majority of my research and clinical focus is on prostate cancer. This is a complex cancer, and it can range from they're slow growing or and not dangerous or aggressive right at the outset, right at diagnosis. So you have to help navigate patients and their family members through that initial diagnosis and a what can be a very complex evaluation period. Then you have to help patients figure out what treatment makes the most sense for them by balancing, you know, their health priorities and the potential side effects of treatment. And it's a complex process that I find incredibly, incredibly rewarding. And on the research side, if there's anything I can contribute to help personalize care for patients, I would find that an incredibly rewarding career.
That's a really great answer. Thank you for sharing that. And I guess just what steps are you taking, or does one have to take, to prepare yourself for the job market after fellowship?
Right. So as I mentioned, I do have a job that I'm starting in the fall because I'm at the end of fellowship. But I would say the if I had to describe to current fellows or future fellows that initial, what do I do to get going in this, especially for academicians, I would say just start having your mentors reach out to potential department division chiefs or department chairs and get some sit downs with them at your national or international or even regional conferences. The sooner that you can kind of put yourself out there and say and start describing to these folks what kind of role or job are you looking for, you start to hone that message even for yourself and make it clear to yourself and the community what you're looking for. I can tell you now, looking back, that about a year ago, now I started that process maybe a year and a couple months. And even if I didn't end up applying to jobs at those particular departments, it put my name out there. And there were some academic roles that had no public listing. But because I had been sitting down and telling people, you know, I'm interested in prostate cancer, both on the clinical and research side, there were roles that people reached out to me. Who were trying to fill jobs like that. And if I hadn't been taking those sit downs, I don't think that would have been the case.
That's really great and really good advice for other new oncologists. So thank you for sharing that. And what are some of the biggest challenges you anticipate facing as a new oncologist?
Right. So what I've been telling fellows and also kind of reflecting on the recent job search for myself is that there are really two steps here. The first is figuring out exactly the balance that you want in your career. How much research, how much clinical, and then, of course, what the focus for either of those are going to be. And that takes a level of internal insight, understanding what is it that you're passionate about? What can you see yourself doing every single day? What motivates you? And once you understand that in yourself, after that, it's conveying that really clearly to the potential leaders at whatever job that you're looking towards. And not only getting clarity, not only giving clarity on what you want your role to be, but figuring out, you know, the flexibility in the jobs that you're applying there. There's never going to be a perfect job. There's always going to be something about every job that does not align perfectly with what you're looking for. But as long as you are clear into yourself what you're looking for and clear to leadership what you're looking for, that's going to be the key to helping you get to that role and help mold that role in the way that best suits yourself too.
That definitely makes sense. And that's really exciting. You must be very excited about this next step in your journey.
Oh,
That's really
absolutely.
cool. Awesome. And just looking ahead, what are some of the exciting advancements that you see on the horizon for the treatment of prostate cancer?
So I like I've mentioned, and I think most of us who take care of patients with prostate cancer understand it's a complex disease. And the complexity comes from the range in which it presents in terms of aggressiveness. We, as urologists, have seen the prostate cancer patient population evolve from when we were diagnosing a little bit too much of these wimpy cancers and had to dial back how we were screening. And now we're in a position where we're diagnosing a little bit more aggressive tumors. And having to navigate those patients through those the range of possibilities in terms of treatment. So for me, the most exciting advancements that I see coming for patients with prostate cancer are either more targeted therapies, so therapeutics that are more and more specific to prostate cancer tumors, or rendering biomarkers in our favor so that we can make sure that in terms of precision oncology, and to quote, some of the most important, I guess, definitions, we want to make sure we're giving the right patient the right treatment at the right dose at the right time. And contributing to any of those four, I think, are going to be some of the most exciting advancements coming forward for patients with prostate cancer.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see. And I know there's been a lot of advancements, even just from AUA. It'll just be exciting to see how the field continues to grow. And I guess just moving more
Absolutely.
into the research side of things, can you discuss the
Yes.
advantages and limitations of using PSMA as a biomarker for prostate cancer?
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up. This is my current focus as a researcher, and how what my initial grants are going to be focusing on, and my mentorship research. So, PSMA currently is used as a marker of prostate tumors, largely for two things. One, as a target for radiotracers during PET imaging. So we can now localize and quantify prostate cancer in a patient because PSMA, this protein, is expressed so highly on the cell surface of prostate tumors. Additionally, it's also used as a target for radioligand therapy. So you attach a small molecule to a payload that has a high radiation dose, and that small molecule can go to PSMA, attach itself, internalize itself, and then helpfully treat the prostate tumor. One difficulty that we have right now is understanding how PSMA reflects the underlying biology of a prostate tumor. So we use it for those two reasons, but that I mentioned, but we really don't know why some prostate tumors don't express any PSMA at all. And this is really important because now that PSMA PET imaging is FDA approved in the US and our guidelines support it for initial staging, we have an opportunity here to essentially characterize one of the most commonly obtained biomarkers because of that. So almost so many men are going to be getting PSMA PET right when they're diagnosed with prostate cancer. And we can use the differential expression of PET of PSMA in those patients to determine, well, maybe this treatment makes the most sense for you versus that one, or perhaps you'd be better suited for surveillance versus, surgery or radiation. And that's where my interests are, is figuring out what does it mean when a tumor has very low or very high expression of PSMA.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that interest. And diving in a little deeper, just how does PSMA positivity influence treatment decisions for patients with prostate cancer? I guess particularly in the context of precision oncology.
Absolutely. So there's been some wonderful, wonderful work already starting the process of investigating PSMA positivity in patients with prostate cancer. I would say that a lot of this work for right now has focused on patients with very advanced prostate cancer who have seen that these patients have seen multiple lines of therapy, and those tumors are particularly resistant to some of the therapies that we give for patients with prostate cancer. There has been much less done in patients with newly diagnosed prostate cancer, which would be, my focus as a urologist who's seen those patients a little bit sooner in their treatment course. So again, now that most of these patients are getting PET scans, this presents a monstrous opportunity for us to learn about what PSMA positivity means. We already know that prostate cancer that's initially diagnosed, compared to that of patients who have seen many therapies, there's substantial differences in their genomics and the underlying biology of those tumors. We can't really relate one to the other. So that's where someone like myself comes in, who's a urologist seeing patients in their earlier stage of their disease. It's up to someone like me in the urology or the urologic oncology community to figure out what does PSMA positivity mean and how is that going to influence our treatment decisions in the future.
That's very interesting. Thank you for that. And beyond traditional imaging techniques, are there emerging methods for assessing PSMA expression that hold promise for the future?
Absolutely, and I would say that this is an important ongoing process. Currently, what we're trying to do is assess patients who did get PSMA PET prior to their surgery. So they got their whole prostate removed, but we have all of the measurements from their PET scan prior to surgery. So what we're trying to look at is seeing how do those metrics correlate with, for instance, the RNA levels of PSMA, so the RNA that codes for the protein, or the protein levels that we can measure in those tumors. And of course, if there's been any differences in the DNA and how that might correlate with differences in PSMA metrics on PET scans. So it's certainly a very interesting topic of research right now, ongoing. I think it remains that, the most important thing is how does it all relate back to the PET imaging, because that's what patients get right now.
Definitely makes sense. And are there any ongoing clinical trials investigating the use of PSMA in combination with other treatment modalities for prostate cancer?
Absolutely. Many trials are going on. So first off, there are ongoing trials that are now using those radioligand therapies that I mentioned earlier. Those trials that initially tested those therapeutics have been saved for patients with the very advanced prostate cancer. And that makes sense. That's when patients suffer the most from their disease, that's when they succumb to the disease. So they are testing those treatments currently, or they have tested those treatments most often, those very advanced stages. We're looking forward to more trials that are currently ongoing in which patients are getting those therapeutics earlier and earlier in their disease courses. So some of the most important, I think, for the urologic oncology community and the patients, the population that my colleagues might see the most often are there are treatments, there are trials that are investigating PSMA radioligand therapy as a neoadjuvant treatment prior to prostatectomy. Two of those have already reported, one for Israel and one from Australia, with important sort of preliminary clinical results. There is a current trial that's recruiting over at MD Anderson that I think we're all looking forward to. And in addition to that, I think that one critical space, again, that's early in the treatment course for patients with prostate cancer, is that time when they get a first treatment like radiation or surgery, and then they have a recurrence of prostate cancer. And a lot of people are looking to that timeline as, can we offer therapeutics that help these patients still have a potential option for cure from prostate cancer instead of systemic therapies alone that might not cure the tumor but slow down the growth. Some of those trials are looking to offer patients radioligand therapy in addition to hormone therapy, or maybe in addition to radiotherapy that's directed at the metastatic disease that's seen on PSMA PET. There's a number of trials in that space that I think a number of people in my community are really looking forward to.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. It's exciting to see how many new and innovative approaches and trials there are. It's cr crazy how much the landscape continues to grow, and it's great. And
Absolutely.
I guess just moving forward, how do you envision PSMA fitting into the broader landscape of precision oncology for prostate cancer in the next 5 to 10 years?
This is a wonderful question, and really the subject of what that I'm most passionate about. So I feel it would be incredibly rewarding if the urologic oncology community can start to not only nominate PSMA as a biomarker of a resistance to this therapy or a susceptibility to that therapy, but then also use it in that manner to guide options for patients with prostate cancer. So if a patient comes in and they have an unfavorable risk prostate tumor, they get their PSMA PET scan for staging, they very thankfully don't have metastatic disease, but they do have a tumor that is incredibly hot on PSMA PET. I think it would be a wonderful place to see the community to go to a place where in 5 to 10 years they can tell that patient, oh, your tumor had this level of PSMA on their PET imaging. That means you would most likely benefit from this treatment. And Vice versa to that, if your tumor had no PSMA or very limited PSMA, that tells us, oh, instead of that, you really should try this. That is where I see our community going. And I think that because, again, patients are getting the imaging, it's in our interest to leverage that information to help personalize care.
Definitely. And we've talked a lot about the exciting advancements in the space, so I have to ask just what unmet needs still exist?
Right. So I think that in precision oncology, it's still very clear that there are patients who are getting more treatment than they need, and some are getting not as intense treatment as they probably need. And that's going to continue to be a dichotomy, and that's going to continue to be one of the main reasons why precision oncology advancements for patients with prostate cancer is going to be so critical and so important. It's just still such a common disease, more than 300,000 diagnoses in the US alone on an annual basis. We have we have such a long way to go. So that we know, well, this treatment is definitely going to help you, or we can spare that patient of some other treatment and all the side effects that come along with it.
Definitely. That's important to point out. Thank you. And is there any research of your own that you can highlight?
Right. So I think that what I'm most excited right now about is my research interests, and my lab is currently going to be focusing on delving more into the biology of tumors based on their PSMA PET metrics. So this is going to be the first chance on a large scale that we'll learn what's the underlying drivers of tumor progression in patients with very high PSMA levels or very low PSMA levels. It's that information that's going to be critical to help us hypothesize or generate ideas for important clinical trials. So it's that information that's going to be the foundation for the translational clinical trial investigation in the future.
That's really exciting. And I guess to kind of conclude our conversation, do you have any advice for other emerging experts in the field?
Yes, I think that what I've grown to appreciate as I've spent my fellowship time here at UCLA is that there's a wonderful prostate cancer research community in the US and internationally. And being a part of that community has not only helped me gain support for my research, but has also allowed me to get ideas and validation that what I'm thinking about and the problems I'm thinking about and the problems my group is thinking about, they're all worthy of further investigation. So I would say, regardless of any fellows, clinical or research interests, find that community, become a part of it, give back to it, and learn what are the interesting trials or research studies that are going on. Expose your research ideas to that community so that it can be evaluated and criticized and developed and turn into something that is going to be the most likely to be helpful to your patients. If I could tell fellows that now, I think they would get something from this conversation.
For more updates on the latest news and trends in oncology, be sure to visit www.targetedonc.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. You can also find us across social media platforms. Follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Targeted Onc, and on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Targeted Oncology. See you next time.